What we're looking for now is from each of those groups, just a sense of what the response was, what the thoughts were, and also some questions, because these people have had it rather easy so far. So if there are difficult, particularly difficult questions would be good. I'm sure they will all be very keen to answer and give further thoughts. Are the people I mentioned the people who are going to come and speak on behalf of the groups initially? And please feel free to add comments at any point, as long as they're polite. It helps. Eric, would you want to come up first and just share what your group were saying and thinking?
Thank you very much, Ian. Yes, we had quite a big group, and it was difficult to keep them under control. Lots of interesting points that were made. I think one point that was an interesting one that which we haven't really addressed up till now is the positions of other religions other than our own concerning this particular question. I don't know whether there would be an opportunity to have some responses on that, and maybe we could also look at that in one of the future events. Other point I thought was one which was really nice. It was started off with, well, how can you pray to a set of equations? I think I somehow paraphrased that statement, but I think it represents quite an interesting deep question, which is that there is a very different language between science and between religion. Science addresses the questions about how things work, not why things are the way they are, and that the existential questions that we face in the middle of the night are not often answered by simple mathematical equations. And I think that that's one of the issues that needs to somehow be brought together, and I don't know if any of the scientists would be able to respond to this idea that two languages are so different from each other because they're representing answers to very different questions. And then another point which was quite interesting one, which was that the opposite of faith is certainty. I thought that was a very nice statement and needs to be, I'd like to, if anyone could respond to that particular statement, whether the opposite of faith is certainty. Then the other issues had to do with, I think, a lot to do with the story of the Bible and the belief in literal truth of the Bible. We've had already this mentioned the question of whether or not belief in literal truth of the Bible is compatible or incompatible with scientific knowledge, and whether the Genesis story is true or whether it is just an allegory. These were the points. So these are the questions I have to you.
Thank you, Eric. I thought you did believe equations held the answer to everything. I'm quite surprised to hear you say that. Would any of you like to pick up any of those points? I mean, maybe Theo, just to start us off, is Christianity different from other major religions in this issue of how it relates to scientific discovery?
Well, I don't have a wide-ranging knowledge of a great many different religions, but certainly Islam is credited with having kept science alive through what we call the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages and what is generally called the Golden Age of Islam by historians. And many of those who championed observation and experimentation were also quite adept at mathematics. Mm-hmm. It all went together for them, and yet it was apparently very much a part of their faith and of their culture and therefore consistent with their religion. So I'd like to know more about that. And when we talk about the great scientists of Western civilization, so many of them are Jewish, and many of them believing and practicing Jews. But I think you'd have to get into more specifics than I have at my fingertips to make a really intelligent
answer. You know everything, Theo. That's been my experience
Thank
so far
you,
in life.
Well.
Ian, I think about the Aztecs and some of the discoveries we're making still today about mathematics and astronomy that these guys figured out centuries ago, and how they did it, that's beyond me for sure, but it's quite amazing.
I'm intrigued by Eric's comment about praying to equations. I think I can see us spending hours over that one in future. And the question that's coming to my mind from that, and maybe just David, I'd ask you to respond. In that sense, does scientific discovery actually help you to live life and to make sense of life? I don't just mean with the practical things of how you get from A to B or something, but does your understanding of science actually help you to make sense of life and to have faith, in a sense? Yeah.
Could I do a follow-up question?
Yeah, okay.
Is there a continuum from your faith to your music to mathematics and science?
Okay, plan B, yes. I wouldn't say there's a direct connection there, but just to follow up on the praying to equations, as I see it, as people were developing laws, coming to some understanding, at some point somebody would say, well, it's interesting to know this goes bigger when that goes bigger, that's interesting, but somebody's going to say how much. And that's why we end up with an equation, because it tells you exactly how much. So if, for example, you want to know how strong is the gravity, then you need to know via an equation. And if you've got an equation, you can use it and you can send men to the moon. And that's exactly what we were able to do using the law of gravity. But that's just an expression of the law. It's nothing more than that. It's part of, it's no deeper than that. It's not more, you know, understanding is just an expression of what we know to be or think to be true as far as we are able. So that's, I don't think you should see an equation as some lofty, you know, be all and end all. It's not the end of the knowledge at all. But obviously behind that is why. That's, I think, what Eric has already said this. Mm-hmm. It tells you nothing about why. Maybe later on you could come to some bigger theory which encompasses that, and out of that comes the law of gravity, and you say, okay, that's sort of why. But somebody's going to say, well, why is that one? Obviously, there's a chain of whys. That's the point there. And science just goes some way along here, but it doesn't attempt to finalise that answer at all. Now, where a music fits in, I don't know. Music's one of my interests, classical music, but I see that as another human expression, I suppose. And there are many human expressions which are very, very beautiful and rich in understanding, and I think that's one of the enriching parts of our human life. Seeing science in that is also part of it. And I see that as a very positive, enriching side. And if you want to see an emotional side, sometimes when we have a very good, clear night, you can see all the stars. You can see so many more stars. You can see things you cannot see normally if you look away from a lighted area like Geneva. And then I just think that is God showing off. And that thought, you know, maybe I'm just the one person who's looking at that time and see it, and it's just for me. I see that, and I can be very touched by that. And I'm reminded that that's, you know, oxygen atoms, nitrogen atoms, hydrogen, helium. Yes, but it's still very, very beautiful.
And Mark, just to give you a chance, the sense Eric summed up, maybe what's a popular thought, that science talks about how things happen and religion really is about why we're all here. Is that something you recognize? Does that distinction seem realistic to you?
Yes, I would say that, when we were speaking about purpose and so forth, that would be the realm, let's say, of a religion, faith, yeah. And that the how part, well, the how, and let's say at some point where we're studying, let's say from the Big Bang and how that began and how it continued until we have the present universe, that is would be something of the realm of science, yeah. physics. The only, I guess the only thing is, which is really quite interesting, at least not, at least the interest for me, is recently there's a lot of discussion about the multiverse. Mm. And here we get into some interesting issues of, because of the fact that you have all these parallel universes. And this subject then gets into the issues about then are we getting something that describes actually like everything, you know? And this is yes. when I was describing this, the whole thing about the thing about the whether there's answering the question about whether there's a purpose in life or something mm. like that, because this the multiverse could potentially explain, let's say, some kind of something about our existence. I'm not an expert mm-hmm. on this, but I find this a very fascinating.
So the universe may not be as universal as we thought. So.
That's right. I find it fascinating. Yeah. That,
exactly, and because I remember taking part in discussions on if there's life on other planets, did Christ die for them also? If there's life in other universes, I don't quite know how that computes. Just before we move on to another group, anyone have something you're very anxious to share or ask? On. Yeah? so the question is on the subject of is certainty the opposite of doubt? And you were saying that for René Descartes, the one certainty there was the existence of God. And he was, in a sense, taking skepticism, the question of doubt to as far a level as he could, but he never got as far as doubting the one certainty of God. And that's a useful reminder, yes. Mike, would you want to come and share what your group were agonizing over or delighting in?
After seeing Eric's group of 9 people, I felt that I was lucky I only had 6, including myself. I managed to pick up one interesting comment from each of the other 5 people, and I'll give them one by one and then add a few things of my own at the end, if you don't mind, group. general thing was I was really impressed that people weren't speaking as if today was a sort of homework question. This was clearly some things that they've thought about many, many times over many, many years. The first comment was another, in a sense, a sort of continuation of mankind has moved from the earth is the center of things to the sun is the center of things, and then this is my God, you know, with all these multiverses and vast expanding Big Bang theory and stuff like that. Are we even significant in the creation of everything? That was one thought, very well explained, a lot better than I just said it. Another one which ties up with a couple of questions that came up in the beginning, which is why isn't there more thinking about the social sciences? And for Theo, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the reissue of Kuhn's book in 50 years after, the introductory chapter which was added was saying that Kuhn's purpose of writing the book was to try and get the scientific method applied in the non-scientific things like the social sciences, which I thought was a really helpful sort of idea. And what came out in our group was not only was the social sciences not mentioned, but many of the things which are taught and so on are sort of inconsistent within themselves, and there should be a big cleanup on the social sciences side. In particular, the idea of believing the Bible when it's so warlike is clearly not something which we want to go into in any depth. There was another point, which was, is science and religion, are science and religion mutually exclusive, or can they coexist? There was a little bit of academic discussion about Dawkins and people like that, and it seemed like the idea of evolution, where science sort of came out of an earlier period before science, and religion came in and then science came on top of it, and now because of all this nonsense between the social sciences of reappearing here, there was extra, conflict among the human views of such things. Another person was very, very compelled to go further. He had thought that the religious stories are not respected by the science, and the science people are a little bit too humble. I myself had some trouble when putting these two thoughts together, but maybe it's because the scientific method at the root is saying that we must never, ever completely be sure. And then, again, on the question of science having troubles within itself, when science is applied, let's say, to the material world and we do all these wonderful things, we somehow have a different science when we start raping nature. So the science is really doing bad things, and as we know, there are people who say we're going to have to do a different way of thinking to get out of the problems that we've created with the current method. So those were the thoughts, and now I have just a couple of my own. And one is that Homo sapiens, according to the latest estimates, is or has been around for 200,000 years. And whatever you might mean by civilization, it's relatively recent on that scale. So let's not get upset because it's obviously a work in progress.
Thank you, Mike. A very full summary of I'm sure, of all that went on there. Any of you like to pick up on any of those points or respond to them?
I would like to say, to respond about the point about whether there's this mutual exclusivity. Mm. I would certainly say that I would not say that if you're a scientist, you cannot be, let's say, a Christian or any other religion or something like that. Or if you're a Christian, you cannot be a scientist. I should say there are I've met some scientists who do say things like that, who try to exclude, but they are a very small number. So I would.
Well, if the scientific method, though, is saying you're only going to accept something when it's been tried and tested and it's repeatable and provable, and yet you're also going to say, no, I just believe this because I believe it, or whatever a religious person might say. I can understand, I think, why people might say that's not compatible.
Well, I guess the point is it's a matter of kind of like domain. You know, there is an area that would be, let's say, considered as some place where is you can do an experiment, that you can do something that is repeatable, and you can do something that's reproducible. So that definitely is the domain of science, right? But there are other areas, which is that why question, for example, right? That you cannot do an experiment and find out and what the answer is and then try to repeat that experiment answering the question of why are we here, for example. And so that would be another domain, and I would say that they're separate, okay, but you can still hold both. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to exclude the other.
I should say we actually made a deliberate decision not to include social science as part of this. We had a big discussion on that on one of our many discussion evenings. But I'm just in terms of a test being reproducible, people do not fit that bill very well. We don't respond the same way to the same thing on different days. And so it's difficult to, to come up with some test that would be provable again and again when it comes to human life or human struggles or anything, because we're all unique and we're all unique each day. I'm not sure about that, Arthur. Okay. You can come back on that. Ross, I think, were you going to say something? No, sorry, I couldn't remember. Theo Moss, yes.
Could I just comment that another of the decisions was that because this is called science and faith, that we're also addressing sort of a big picture science rather than science and technology. And in the World Council of Churches, for example, the conferences that we've held that are science-related tend to be about science and technology, that is, the application of science in the world around us. And so the outcome of such conferences tend to have more to do with social ethics and social science than with pure science or theoretical science.
Looking at the outcome of science and the outcome of religion could be another great series for some time. Yes, a frightening one. Arthur, would you like to come and share what your group were enjoying? Thanks.
I confess that I did not lead the group very well, so we didn't have a carefully constructed, and I haven't got, how many was it? 1 point for each participant plus two. No, I don't. What I will say is that at times in our discussion, we came back again to the fact that we were talking about science and we were talking about religion, specifically Christianity, and we were not seeing conflict, we were not seeing any problem. We were talking about two, as you say, domains, two compatible domains. And in fact, we were seeing some similarities in the sense that in both cases, one was seeking for an explanation. You lived in a world and you wanted to understand it. There was a question put, which I thought was a good one, which might have been after Mac had presented his talk, is to say, and so what? You know, why are we even here? Why are we talking about it? Why is this interesting? Because, and the obvious answer, is it obvious? But because mankind is a curious being. We want to know. Do we all want to know? Well, historically, we've been wanting to know for ages. And there's two domains in which we want to know. We want to know in the physical domain, and we also want to know in that personal, religious, social domain. It's a very broad and ill-defined area. And so in both areas you have this. And in one sense, the Bible is there giving a long piece of history, very long, this is thousands of years if you go back to the beginning, partly to explain why at any point in time the Jewish, the Hebrew, the Jewish, the Christian community was where it is, to look back and explain. Not necessarily to answer the question in some specific scientific mathematical fashion, but to say, well, let me tell you where we've come from, let me tell you what's happened and why this means this to me and what the consequences are of taking these actions. So both domains don't look, if you say, for the truth, but they look for an explanation and an understanding. It was interesting that in our introductory talks that the two scientists were very careful not to talk and use the word truth, whereas the theologians can use the word truth. Sort of the exact opposite of what you might expect. Are we being super cautious not to tread on each other's toes? I don't think so, because truth, as a theologian might see it, can be claimed to be absolute, but the truth isn't with me here and now, and it certainly isn't on a piece of paper. The truth is a far different concept there. And that then was the question of, we see mysteries. In science, we're saying this is extraordinary. I mean, what interest to me reading on the fringes of what's happening at CERN, just because by a connection I get CERN's internal newsletters and publications. And so I go, well, yeah, I'm not quite sure what it's about, but it's clear there's really a debate about what act. Now we've got the Higgs boson. And that leads potentially to goodness knows what more. And nobody does know yet what's going to come next. We wait for the great machine to start again, and in a year or two's time, we'll be going, whoa, we're off on another tack. And that led to the question of, are these mysteries there, as are the mysteries of the faith? Are we meant to answer them? Are they always going to be there? Has the whole thing been set up so that we are challenged forever and ever? Will we ever come to a resolution? I tend to think I'd be really worried if we had the perfect equation and suddenly we could solve the whole thing. I would not sleep at night with that. I'm quite happy that there's something ongoing. And you've been studying, you gentlemen, I'm taking you as representative, been studying the scriptures. It's not that big a book, a set of books, and you still are finding new things and discovering more. It is amazing that both domains are still advancing in parallel. So maybe we aren't meant to actually find all the answers in either side. And we were quoting St. Paul and talking through glasses darkly. I speak for myself when I say that I am quite satisfied to have mysteries in the faith. And I'm not looking forward to, but I will rejoice in the day when I'm in the world beyond. And suddenly I can understand all these things which to me made no sense here, because I believe they will make sense in the hereafter. But there is a question. Do you sort of believe that science will ever actually come to an end, will answer? Not everything, but in certain areas. I'm an engineer. That was an interesting point. We were how many, eight or something? And five of us were engineers. So we all saw science as an interesting tool to give us things by which we can do something useful in life, you see. And maybe that's a discussion later on, as you said, what is the use of science and how is it used? But, sorry.
I think we have a scientist here, Marco, who can confirm this, yeah? But I can say that physicists do not necessarily desire to have absolutely everything answered. And I mean, it in some ways, there's a natural feeling of satisfaction, but actually I think it's the nature of all physicists to want to continue to explore. There's something else that's unknown. And so actually they get very excited when something is completely unexpected. And the whole theory breaks down.
Greater than the speed of light.
Well, that caused a lot of excitement, yes. And that's why it's the same. The desire is to continue to explore.
It was fascinating that when the result came out that a particle had travelled faster than the speed of light. In terms of what you were saying about what science is earlier, you know, people immediately disproved it. They found the fault in the theory and we went back to a different understanding. I'm just wondering how Ross, as someone who preaches every week, you know, how you feel about that? Are you looking for an end to mysteries? Are you looking for, when you preach on a Sunday, someone to say, no, that's not true because of this, this, and this? Would you find that a helpful response?
I think when I approach the scriptures, there are some things that you should take literally. Don't steal. Don't sleep with your neighbor's wife, things like that. But there's other things that are a mystery that we don't fully understand. And I think one of the areas that's a noble thing about science and faith, it is a pursuit of truth and understanding. And I think that's where we can be on a similar journey, and we need to applaud and encourage both aspects of that, learning more. And so when it comes to the physical sciences, definitely, that's where the science world kind of is preeminent. When it comes to bigger questions of truth and life and so on, I think it's where people of faith have something to contribute. But it's not in conflict, I wouldn't say necessarily with each other, but that pursuit of truth is a noble thing, a good thing.
Is there anything you could imagine or envisage that a scientific proof suspicious of using that word after all, but something that science comes out with as a proof that you would feel threatens your faith or undermines your faith? Can you imagine any such thing, or are they completely separate realms?
I think my challenge would be to try to understand where this truth is coming from, this idea from the scientific perspective. And so I'd want to chew on it, think about it, and evaluate it. And so I couldn't imagine anything really that would shake me to the core and say, I can't be a person of faith anymore. I'd be interested in hearing and interacting.
A challenge for the scientists in the room. Come up with something.
we heard a little before about astronomy and so on. I'm reminded of the psalmist, Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. But when we sit there and look at a starry night, as you did, and you're just amazed, and we talk about parallel universes, again, it just opens our mind up to the greatness of this world, this universe, or parallel universes that we're in. And for me, that causes me to worship. For others, it maybe causes them to question more, but I think both are worthwhile. Both are good to do.
perhaps in sense of outcomes, one outcome of both is a sense of humility, you know, that there's this great particle physics thing going on that we're only just beginning to understand, and most of us mere mortals can't begin to get our heads around, and the scale of it all and the expanding universe, we realise how small we are. And of course, before the creator God, it's the same sense of how small we are, how remarkable it is that any of us are here, and that sense of, we might react differently to that, but that might be the effect it has on all of us.
I toured CERN back in November, December, and I was just amazed to see the energy that was there, not just what was going on under the ground, but all these scientists, and then I thought about the whole engineering side of things. Who puts these machines together, and how do they coordinate all that? And we had in our church someone who comes from Chicago who helps turn the machine on eventually, so I've interacted with him a little bit. And for me, it was exciting to see what was taking place there. Could I understand it? By no means, but I had an appreciation for the teamwork that happens to make that place go.
And that is a phenomenal aspect of CERN, that all of the different nationalities of the world in conflict in so many other ways will come together in this shared project. And maybe that's something our religions have never quite managed to bring people together across divides to the same extent. And that's quite a challenging thought. Yeah. Maybe we should come to David to come and share with your group, and then we'll give anybody a chance to make comments that's burning to do so.
Thank you very much, Ian. So there were six in my group, and I must say I didn't check with everybody were they a scientist or were they a non-scientist, but I very much got the sense from the discussion that we had a mix of both. And I must say the discussion was very respectful, very, you know, there's a lot of interest in there, and I think that people are expressing that how much they valued having an opportunity to have this type of discussion, so I think that was interesting. One point that was made at the beginning is that it might be useful to have non-believers also, perhaps as a member of a future panel, so that we get a true diversity of opinions that are being expressed in this series. So I think that's maybe something for us to think about in the planning group as we go forward for the other evenings. We started off by reflecting on what we heard in terms of the sort of the definitions of science and religion, and like some of the other groups, we came up with this: science is about how, and faith is more about why. But I think there was a nuance there as well, in as much as faith often there is an emotional aspect to it, and it's about the questions that we can't answer with the scientific method. But there's also an emotional component to that. That is important in our understanding of what we mean by faith. And maybe, building on what you were saying in going forward, maybe what we can measure with the science, with science is going to change. And we've heard that has changed over the years. And maybe we are going to be approaching, and I'm speaking as a biologist, that's my background, and we are beginning to approach ways in which we can measure some of these more emotional sort of responses. So, where the boundaries are between science and faith, may become more blurred or may change as we go forward. Another point that was made in the group is it's important that for both scientists and people of faith to have humility in terms of the views they're expressing. And perhaps with science, there's a tendency, because you're measuring things, you're trying to reproduce things, that there's at least a perception that there's a more certainty there. And the point was made, actually, there is often a good degree of uncertainty, even though when you've done your measurements, done your reproducibility, and therefore it's important that scientists recognize that, and people of faith as well, and have a degree of humility about recognizing the limitations of what they're doing. And then a final point, and maybe a little bit more controversially, was that in science, as we heard at the beginning, one of the aims is to sort of put ideas, hypotheses forward, and ask people to challenge and test them and try and knock them down, essentially, and that then is a way in which we go forward. And there's maybe a sense that for people of faith, they're less willing to do so. You know, because of that emotional attachment to it, there's less willingness to sort of allow challenges to occur to what is perceived as the truth. So, you know, and that's perhaps a more controversial point that was sort of coming out in the discussion, but that was what I picked up from the points that were being made in our group.
Thank you. A thought coming from that, I mean, maybe David, do you see, so why not, do you see scientists becoming so identified with their theories that they really are frightened of letting go of them? I mean, we're saying that our faith is so personal to us that if someone comes up with evidence that might seem to question it, we're not necessarily as open as we might be to considering that objectively. Do you see that in the scientific world as well, or are people happy to be proven wrong?
I think the answer is science is done by human beings. That is the problem. With all the errors and biases and egos and things. But the desire for repeatability is an attempt to avoid that. The idea of it being open and untestable by other people is a trying to avoid that as a problem. But there are well-known cases. For example, when the back in around 1900, 1905, I think Einstein produced his special theory of relativity. He accepted a very beautiful experiment that had been done about the velocity of light. And this was such a nice, simple experiment that the result couldn't be argued with. Everybody more or less had to accept it. Einstein accepted that idea and built a theory on it, which is, we still think, is very good. There were apparently at least 14 alternative theories developed because they didn't like that. The Einstein's theory involved upsetting the whole concept of time. And nobody liked that at the time. It really revolutionized the way we looked at science. But unfortunately, it looked better than all these other 14 theories. But you could see how people were fighting to resist it. I can, and just another case, very simple. For at least 30 years, we have known there's, shall we say, a problem in the way stars go around a galaxy. They go around too fast for the gravity that we think is there. And I'll be very careful with my words. They seem to go too fast, and therefore, if they were going around the sun, they would speed off because there's not enough gravity to keep them there. They would go off somewhere else. But somehow they continue to go around the galaxy. Now, rather than face this in some ways, we have invented something called dark matter, which you may have heard of. Now, dark matter would be very convenient, because if we had some dark matter, then we could keep all our theories that we like and love, and we would be very much more pleased with that. But so far, we've had no hint of dark matter. And they're looking for it in CERN, but it doesn't go down the ground very much, and I've not seen it in the car parks or anything. It might be that we just have to throw out some of these theories that we have. But that's why we keep hold these things lightly. That's not the only problem as well. If you know you really wanted to be honest about the state of science today and whether it would sort everything out and finally we finish, go back to 1900. They more or less thought that. Mm-hmm. It looked very, very good in 1900. I think Maxwell wrote down 4 equations of electrodynamics and everybody was very pleased and they looked beautiful and everybody said that. But 5 years later, Einstein came along with this theory of relativity, and they were not recovering from that before Max Planck came along with quantum mechanics. And that really upset everything, and we have not recovered from that, let's be honest. Now we're at the other end of that century, and we're accused of losing 95% of the universe, and we can only explain the 5% that we can see. Well, do you call that progress? I mean,
certainly you're losing the universe more quickly than churches are losing members. Fascinating. I also love the idea of stars having problems. I like that. So there are problems with the stars. Ross. Yes.
I want to respond about, are we just a scientist or are we just a faith practitioner? And I think we're all a combination of both things. I think anybody who's a person of faith is still exploring and interacting with the world around them, yeah, and learning things all the time. And I think people who are in the sciences are also, again, questioning and figuring things out about the why that we've talked about. So I don't think it's an either or necessarily. I think there's often nuances and differences in each person. So
I suppose that's about just going to come to Theo for a perspective. Scientists have to give up their loved theories when someone comes up with a better theory that makes more sense of things. And I'm thinking of other examples where churches, even as institutions, have acknowledged they were wrong. I mean, maybe around apartheid or something like that. I mean, do you see that happening, or is the resistance, the sense of to need to cling to what I believe in, is that too strong to allow us to let go?
Well, I think you see it in recent years, particularly in interreligious dialogue and cooperation, that, a series of popes now, three popes in a row, have famously apologized to various Jewish communities, and votes have been taken at assemblies of particular Protestant traditions, the Lutheran World Federation and others, the Old World Alliance of Reformed Churches and now the World Communion of Reformed Churches, declaring that they were wrong in their attitude to Mennonites and in their persecution of Anabaptists. So I think that's a very hopeful sign, those indications. But as you say, in the matter of apartheid, the World Council of Churches took a very strong position as part of the anti-apartheid campaigns of the 1970s and 80s and 90s, and one of the very first things that happened in that period was that the Dutch Reformed Church of South Africa withdrew from the World Council of Churches in protest because they said the World Council of Churches was clearly wrong and their position was the correct one. Apartheid actually began as a theological doctrine of the Dutch Reformed Church based on their belief in certain orders of creation, that some people were created superior to others. So as a theological principle, no less than a political principle, the Dutch Reformed withdrew. Well, at our last meeting of the Central Committee here at the Ecumenical Center in Geneva, the Dutch Reformed Church of South Africa came and asked to be readmitted to membership of the World Council of Churches, and said very clearly, we were wrong and you were right. And then the World Council said, well, we're going to have to go through a period of 2 years until the next Central Committee meeting to hear from your neighbors and the other churches in Southern Africa to hear whether they accept your apology and want to share membership with you in the World Council. So minds do change occasionally.
Interesting. We're coming towards the end of things. Yes, I'm just going to ask if anyone has anything you'd like to share or reflect on. If you're happy to come to the microphone and be on camera, please feel free to do so. If not, I'll try and summarize what you're saying. Do you want to come?
It's getting too complicated. I see a crossover point between science and religion. The doctrine of Satan has functioned a lot like dark matter. As a sort of a shortcut for explaining things that God probably has an answer for. It's easy to blame it on Satan. And yeah. Anybody agree with me?
That's a thought for us to go away with. I like that, yes. Yes. You want to come, Kuzego? Yeah. Probably the coolest looking dude here tonight. Well done.
Well, basically, like, In all that we've been discussing this evening, like, I can see we're all pretty much converging towards the same idea that science and religion are compatible. But, like, when you enter that discussion with people that might not be here today, they'll invoke arguments like sola scriptura, or saying that maybe thinking that the word wasn't created by God 6,000 years ago in 7 days is completely wrong. And so, in everything that we understood today, like, I'm wondering how to communicate it with people that might like be blocked in their mindset or something like that. And I wonder if you could help us with that. Yep.
Thank you, Kuzega. I mean, a great question in that sense, that for us, perhaps, we've worked through a lot of things, but for people, to have faith in God means believing the Bible and believing in a very literal sense. What do we have to say to people like that?
I think about the story about some people like Alistair McGrath, who at one point was, I think, a biochemist, or I can't remember exactly his area of expertise, but an avowed kind of atheist. But as he interacted with science and studied more and more and more, he felt there was a place for God in that. And he ends up going to do a doctorate in theology afterwards as well. A remarkable man, and writes some great theology books. But the sense of some people have the sense that if you're a person of science, you have to be rejecting a theistic view of God or a theistic view of life. And I think there's enough people who will say, well, actually not. When you actually evaluate things, the underpinnings for an atheistic view on life might not be the most realistic response to the evidence that you have there. So to encourage people to go and to question these things and evaluate them and debate them, I think is a really worthwhile exercise. So I think there's a lot of people, I think McGrath said something along the lines that he realized that he had a very shallow view of truth and all. And so after studying more, he was impacted by that. So I think encourage people to wrestle with those big questions is good.
Mark, you want to come in? Yeah, I was going to say, in fact, actually, it's good that you pointed this out, because actually I think that was the whole goal of these actual conferences, because I think a large part of it is the to be more direct about it, there's been several particular people who appear on the media who would like to convince people that there is no compatibility, that religion is now outdated and it should be thrown away, and that there are people who are making these kind of false ideas. And the idea of having this is to say that actually the real picture is that there is no problem between science and well, at least in particular in Christianity, the one I'm of course I'm most familiar with, and that that if you really were, let's say, meeting people who were coming up with this kind of argumentation, I would suggest that they should really look a little bit more deeper than, let's say, these people who appear in the media. The one I'm thinking about is the facetious way of describing them is the four horsemen of atheism. Mm-hmm. They came into the media largely, I think, in my opinion, for a political reason. It was September 11th had occurred, and there was a backlash against religion, largely because of what happened, and so in that way they became quite prominent and saying that we should now get rid of religion altogether, and clearly this is a view that's a small minority, because if you were to go to someplace like CERN. There's, but not just CERN, but all the various universities. I'm a graduate of MIT. I know MIT professors, you know, many of them who are Christians, mm-hmm. And there is no problem about compatibility or.
I think the question was specifically about, in a sense, religious people who have a very tight, narrow view that they're frightened to let go of, and they feel perhaps as a response to these kind of atheistic moves, they feel the need to be all the more defensive about what they cling on to.
I think about militant atheism or fundamentalist atheism, kind of a funny put those two things together, but that's certainly been the climate, I think, you know, of recent years with some of the people you were mentioning. And I'm just thankful for other people who can argue and present and have expertise and say, well, actually, your kind of conclusions aren't necessarily the best ones. And so I appreciate that interaction.
The things I want to say, apart from thanking all of you for coming, a big thank you to the four of you for coming and being brave enough to share your views and your experience with us. I do want to say there are still refreshments and you're not being chased out in any case, in any sense. So please, we have designed this so that you can mill around and have stimulating conversations. We have these beautifully produced posters, leaflets, which you're welcome to take away. The next in our series will be on Tuesday, 31st of March. We're alternating between Mondays and Tuesdays, something to do with the space-time continuum. I couldn't quite work it all out. But the next one will be a Tuesday. Why are we here? Why will we be here? Will we be here? These are the questions we're looking at. How do we account for life, the universe, and everything? Where did it all come from? Views from the world of science, from the world of faith, and some fascinating discussion around these topics. So thank you very much for sharing in tonight, and hopefully we'll look forward to joining you again in a month's time. Thank you.